because he does care about his people, those that were that love him or that were in his will. But in terms of being careful towards anybody with caution, no.
Right. He didn't have a reason to use caution. How will they react to? What will they do? No. When the people wanted a king, all right, give him a king. This is exactly what he's going to be. And then you got Saul. And for a little while, people thought, we won. We got us a great king. Until he wasn't. And the Spirit of the Lord departed from him. Even giving him a chance, Brother George brought up, gave him a chance to get right even after that. But Saul just wouldn't. He just wouldn't. Then he shows his true colors. But we're far removed from that. Because if you, not to get into Sunday school lesson, but you're going to hear about David fighting against the Philistines. And prior to that, Saul still fighting against the Amalekites that he was supposed to annihilate. And we got one of them here today at a dinner party with the king and the queen. So let's listen to the conclusion of the whole matter in chapter 7 and then finish out the second half.
Chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dinner with Queen Esther. At this second dinner, while they were drinking wine, the king again asked, "Queen Esther, what would you like? Half of my kingdom. Just ask and it's yours." Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your eyes, O king, and if it please the king, give me my life and give my people their lives. We've been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, sold to be massacred, eliminated. If we had just been sold off into slavery, I wouldn't even have brought it up. Our troubles wouldn't have been worth bothering the king over." King Xerxes exploded. "Who? Where is he? This is monstrous." "An enemy, an adversary, this evil Haman," said Esther. Haman was terror-stricken before the king and queen. The king, raging, left his wine and stalked out into the palace garden. Haman stood there pleading with Queen Esther for his life. He could see that the king was finished with him and that he was doomed. As the king came back from the palace garden into the banquet hall, Haman was groveling at the couch on which Esther reclined. The king roared out, "Will he even molest the queen while I'm just around the corner?" And that word left the king's mouth. All the blood drained from Haman's face. Harmona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, spoke up. "Look over there. There's the gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai, who saved the king's life. It's right next to Haman's house, 75 feet high." The king said, "Hang him on it." So Haman was hanged on the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And the king's hot anger cooled.
A turn of events.
Fail.
Fatality. Who is Harbona?
One of the eunuchs.
Harbona.
One of the eunuchs. King.
Now, let's review. Is there anyone who is more powerful in the kingdom, aside from the king Ahasuerus, than Haman? No one more powerful. Everybody, when he goes out, shows honor. Now, we also remember that King Haman, Haman was told by the king to do something for someone that he wanted to honor. What? How did that go? What was it that he wanted done, and how did that go?
Haman was saying to give him the highest honor and to parade him and stuff, let him be seen. And the king said that everything that he said, don't leave a detail out, should go to Mordecai.
Why would he do that?
because he realized, I think in the chapter before, he realized that nothing had been done to honor Mordecai. And it was in the Bible, I think it was saying that it wasn't like brought up in a subject. It was just something that he was thinking of late at night, and mm-hmm. he went to the records to find it, or find out if he had been honored.
Okay, so that was a several part question, just kind of backtrack us to, so that we're all on the same page. Haman had to go out and parade Mordecai, the person he hated. How do we know that he didn't like Mordecai? Were there any clues? Or was it just perception?
At the gallows belt one.
that's an indication that you don't like somebody when you've got 75-foot gallows built where?
In
his yard. That's an indication that you're not liked by somebody. They build 75-foot gallows in their yard with the hopes of hanging you from them. Hasn't even talked to the king about it. I'm going to hang Mordecai. Well, assuming that we get the clearance. That's as bullheaded and arrogant as Gaston, who showed up on Belle's doorstep with the wedding outside the house while he goes to propose to her. You've got a lot of gall to think you're going to just go in and, well, let me talk to the king first. I'm sure he'll be with me on this. Why would he even think the king would be with him on such a what we look at now as a devious thing? Why would Haman believe the king would support such a task?
Well, Haman had the benefit of his dishonesty. Mm-hmm. He had been lying the whole time. He set a stage. He framed a story for the king, and the narrative pointed the king in the direction where Haman wanted him to go. And as long as his narrative would hold up, Haman could be assured that the king would do what Haman wanted the king to do.
Right. So, one of the things that I believe it was Bishop Chandler C.D. Owens who talked about the difference between the truth and a lie is that the truth can stand all by itself, but a lie has to be propped up by another lie. In order for that one to be propped up, it needs another lie. So they can't stand straight because it's not straight. It's always leaning because it's not quite straight up. That's why when people say be straight up, you know, they're saying be truthful with me. But a lie is not straight up. It's always leaning. And so it has to be propped up by another lie because it won't stand on its own. And see? Right, and the truth won't have nothing to do with it. A lie not gonna let the truth's not gonna let a lie prop itself up on it. No. No. You get a lie to hold you up. Cause what is the truth gonna do to a lie that tries to lean on it?
Move.
It's gonna move. It's gonna stay straight up, but it's not gonna support it. If it does anything, it's gonna pull out a flashlight and say, look what he's doing. It's going to expose the lie. That's the purpose of the truth, to expose the lie, to show what it's all about. But here, we have a situation. We have a dinner party where Queen Esther was given the opportunity to ask for anything that she wanted, and then she kind of spilled the beans on Haman. And how did the king respond to this?
Blasphemer! He was hot.
He just leave the mic on.
He was horrified. He was very, very angry to think that somebody would jeopardize the queen's life,
mm-hmm.
or some kind of way threaten the queen whom he loved.
Right.
So he was just beside himself with anger.
He was beside himself with anger.
And Starlane asked him a question. What was that?
The question. What was the question?
How did the king respond?
How did the king respond? Let's use our outside voices inside. How did the king respond to what Queen Esther said concerning Haman, his right-hand man, his trusted advisor, the one who he set up because he put in place something to nullify what could have been a coup from a people that had nothing to do with the laws of the king? How does he respond to this? Who does he believe in this situation? Let's back it up just a little bit. Because Queen Esther brought some information too that was similar about an attack. And what happened as a result of that? Just real quick, anybody?
King wasn't assassinated.
The king wasn't assassinated because they looked into the matter and found it was so. Took those two men and hung them on the gallows. They were eliminated for plotting to take out the king. And this brings back to what Sister Ernie was talking about with Mordecai. He was honored on this day after the king couldn't sleep and he asked for the record to be brought to him. Maybe as a bedtime story, helps put me to sleep. So he's listening and thinking and listening to the record that's being said. This is why the kings always are supposed to know what's going on. It's written in the record. That's why when I say they knew this, they knew better. This stuff that's in record, he couldn't sleep. So what did he do? He had the record being read to him because he's got to have the knowledge of what's going on in the kingdom. So he's going over and say, yes, yes, yes. Okay, yes, I remember there was an assassination attempt. Yes, yes. Mordecai. Wait a minute. Did we ever do anything to honor him? No. Oh, who's in the courtyard? It's Haman. Well, tell him to come here. I want to ask him something. I trust his judgment. And so he asked him a question. Did he have any reason to believe that Haman was up to something at this point when he asked him about it? What about when Haman gave his answer about how the king should honor? It seemed like he wasn't holding back. No, give him the best. This is what the king is hearing. Give him the best. Give him one of your robes to wear. Ride on one of the horses that you rode on in the king. And have a high official go out and parade and say, this is what you do. This is what is done to the man whom the king wants to honor. Do that. You know, I was right to put you in place. I want you to do just that. Because there's a man I want to honor. Haman's just sitting there. Oh boy. Now everyone will have to bow to. Wait a minute. Who? Make way for Mordecai the Jew, who the king wants to honor. And he went home weeping. And the same people that advised him to build the gallows before he even talked to the king are the same ones. Oh, you're in trouble now. He's honoring Mordecai? Wait a minute. What happened to the y'all on my team type situation? Oh, It's bad for you right now. And he went and built the gallows, and he doesn't even have enough time to consider all this because of what? They sent for him. He went to the party that we just got finished talking about, and the queen told the king, Somebody was trying to kill off me and my people. And the king was furious. Who would do such a thing? I don't want to be that guy. But it was Haman. That wicked Haman. Haman. So now it did not appear that the king was conflicted in who to believe. Isn't that interesting? The king didn't seem conflicted. What does that make you think? If the king's not conflicted and he's got his trusted right hand, number two in command, and the queen, who he hadn't called for in 30 days, all of a sudden wants to have a dinner party, and at the dinner party wants to have a banquet, requests a banquet because she wants to tell him something. Why, if they were the only ones here, and I mean, he just got finished honoring a man who saved my life. Why would the king not be conflicted between the two? Sister Chapman. Why would he not be conflicted at this point? Because you. Because of the two people who's got stories.
I think it's because starting off with the situation with Mordecai is the one who told him that someone else was conspiring against him. And it's like someone just tried to take his life, and now his wife, who he loves, is saying somebody's trying to take her life. And to know that, you know, that's kind of what's been happening, I think he's going to trust her word over his. So, and then to know it kind of just unfolded, like he knew that what Haman had said about the decree and all like that. So, I think that's why it was easy for him to take her side and not to question it. Because he just was told about someone who was conspiring to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So just because he's close to him doesn't necessarily mean he can be trusted.
Right, and keeping in mind, just to stir into that answer, the people, they weren't prime ministers, but chamberlains were close to the king as well. And remember, those are the ones that were plotting to kill him. Right. They're close to the king. And being close like that, I mean, they ain't married to him. But Vashti, she was close, right? Sister Evangelist Nesbitt.
If he had, when he heard about it, when she first told him, he was so angry, he just went out into the courtyard. And if he had any doubt at all, or if he was even going to ask Haman, what is this that you've done? When he came back in and saw him, but what he was doing is he's pleading for the queen, but when the king saw him come in, he's there groveling on the place where she was reclining, that just sealed the deal. So if he was going to ask him anything, that just did it. So I think that Haman really, he sealed the deal himself.
On the queen's bed, after the king left out mad, and he comes back in and sees you on the... would he try to defile her while I'm still up in it and I'm still in the room? Oh, man. Brother Nesbitt.
The thing that the pastor had said before that, when you had said that, that the king had not seen Esther for 30 days. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about, when you think nowadays at soap operas and novellas and stuff like that, all kinds of intrigue. What was she doing that 30 days? Wait a minute. What was Haman doing those 30 days? Now he walks back in and he's all up on her and she's just sitting there. I don't know. Was she resisting? That would be one thing. If she wasn't resisting, that'd be another. Just one of those situations where once you're in it, you can't get out of it.
Yeah.
Ain't no way you got out. And the irony there is everything at this point, everything that Haman could say to his own benefit would make him look more guilty. Mm-hmm. The more he would try to defend him, he would need an advocate in this situation. He would need an advocate. And well, that's kind of where we're going.
Now, keep in mind when we read this, Haman is begging for his life. He's not refuting what she said. He didn't refute what she said. He's begging for his life like it was uncovered. Remember, too, when Mordecai thwarted the attempt at the king's life, they checked into it and found it was true. With the situation here with Haman, he came up with a plot, an idea of what could happen, and the king gave him his ring. I trust you. Did they go in to find out if what he was saying was true? Or did he trust this man enough and say, okay, carry it out, and we'll go ahead and handle it? And you look and see how he acted as a way. And I brought up Vashti on purpose because she was a queen too. But how was she towards him? Did Esther ever give indication that she did not see him as king? If it pleases thee, O king. At the banquet that she set up, she's hosting and she's still treating him as king humbly. Carefully, cautiously, but with reverence, always with her, with him, always showing reverence to him and who he is. Vashti was like, "Nah, I ain't coming. Nah, I know I look good, and he want other people to see. I ain't coming." Okay, now you're not the queen. That's her attitude towards him. There may have been indications along the way, but Esther never showed any kind of disregard or disrespect. The closest that she came to it was when she approached. But she put her own life in danger in doing this. And when she did, the way that she conducted herself gave no indication that she didn't look. Okay. Sister Chapman.
But you said I was going to do the comparison with Vashti, but you ended up saying.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Vashti.
Also, with about Haman's sealing the deal, when the king came back in and saw him, and the chamberlain said, "You built a gallows."
Right.
I mean, he didn't have anything on his side. And then he looks out there and sees, there's the gallows. He built, okay, so it's got to be true. Everything, no indication that what she said wasn't true, since the chamberlain said, he built the gallows for Mordecai.
For Mordecai, the one you just honored.
So he just, everything he did, just sealed the deal for him.
Think about this. You talk about Mordecai and stuff. All the things that he was doing against Mordecai, he was making preparation for his own execution.
Oh.
He was building his own gallows at his own house. Talk about curbside service. I mean, it's right there. Delivered it to himself.
Man.
And I was looking at... I'm sorry, did I hit you with it? And I was looking right there before... Right. When the king said in verse 8, he said that the king returned out the palace garden into the place of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. Then said the king, "Will he force the queen also before me in the house?" As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. What I saw there.
Yeah.
Think about this. Think about this. Haman's the one who said the thing about the Jews.
Right.
He got that going, got that whole campaign going, not knowing that Esther was a Jew. The king leaves when we left the part where the king, he hears what Esther said about Haman. He leaves out, and when he returns, he sees Haman in this position with the queen. Now, we're assuming that he looks like he's pleading and prostrated. What did the king see? It could be that this guy who hates the Jews so much is now trying to hurt the queen. It could have been that. Haman has set himself in such a poisonous, like a glue trap for a rat. Like the more he struggles, the more he just covers himself in the thing that's going to destroy him. And it's a picture it throws itself to the New Testament. When we look at Romans chapter 7, when we look inside of ourselves and find both the will to do what's right, and upon seeing that, there's another thing inside of us that says, I don't want to do right. There's this other law, this other need to do something else other than the right thing. And in Haman, that war that goes on inside, it came out. That's what it looks like when that war inside comes out. How the scripture says, things done in the dark will be revealed in the light.
Yeah.
This is what it's talking about. When you sit there and you plan evil against somebody who's done nothing to you, God defends those people, and he'll use your works to judge you.
And just to cap it off with something else, no weapon formed against you shall prosper. Well, we believe that. Look at what happened with Haman. He formed the weapons. It didn't prosper against Mordecai. But it did end up being something used to take out Haman.